Your attention, please.
Listen.
You're listening to TalkZone.com, Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Hi, Hub Arkus here. It's my pleasure, along with Jimmy Clemens and Mike Wilkening, to welcome you all to another edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, where every week we bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen from the NFL, college hoops, and the NBA as well.
We take an in-depth look at NBA free agency beyond LeBron and D-Wade and review a busy week off the field in the NFL.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.
Welcome one and all to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. I'm Hub Arkus, the publisher and editor, and along with senior editor Mike Wilkening and our co-host every week of the basketball season, Jimmy Clemens of the LA Lakers, it is great to have you all with us. Also great to have our favorite guest, our regular NBA and college basketball insider, Steve Kyler, is the publisher of HoopsWorld.com, and Steve is with us to kick off the show. And Steve, since we last visited, a coaching change in Cleveland, it surprises no one, and yet this is the 2008-2009 NBA Coach of the Year. Mike Brown led the Cleveland Cavs to the best record in the NBA this year, two straight early playoff exits, and that means he's done in Cleveland.
Yeah, and it continues the trend of the year after you win the Coach of the Year award, you're done. It's almost as bad as the John Madden NFL curse on the video games. I think it's unfortunate that Mike Brown gets let go, but like you said, I don't think anybody saw it as a huge surprise. This is a coach that was a great defensive coach, and really I think he'd taken the team as far as they could go. The big knock on Mike Brown had been that his offense was very rudimentary, and I think that, you know, in a time when they're trying to convince LeBron James that there's going to be a championship in his future in Cleveland, I think after 2 years of not getting it done, it was the best choice to move forward and make that change. I think it's kind of a weird change because they're keeping all of their assistant coaches in. You wonder how much your change is really going to be done, or if Mike Brown was really just more of a scapegoat for this.
Jimmy, I've got to suspect this is a little troubling to coaches around the league when you can have this kind of success and still get fired. But at the same time, had they lost in the conference finals again, maybe there'd have been an argument to make for Brown. But not even getting as far as last year, going out in round two, that had to be the final nail in his coffin.
Well, there's tremendous expectations from the organization. And I think maybe not so much what Mike has done, but what he hasn't done. And, you know, they went out and they spent a lot of money bringing Jameson in, bringing Shaquille in. So once again, they just hyped up the expectations. And then now with LeBron, choices that he needs to make moving forward, I just think it was kind of a knee-jerk reaction to what the public and the owner wanted.
Steve, we heard all kinds of names in Philly before Doug Collins took the job. We're hearing all kinds of names in Chicago, in Atlanta, in other places. Not a lot of names surfacing with this job yet, and I got to assume that's because their priority is so much more retaining LeBron than it is finding his next coach.
Yeah, and Hub, this is going to be a case of LeBron's going to have some input on the next coach that he plays for, and I think that that's bigger than even Cleveland. I think Chicago is kind of, you know, waiting, hoping they can get an audience with LeBron. The Clippers are waiting, hoping they can get an audience with LeBron. Even the New Jersey Nets are kind of hovering there, hoping they can get an audience with LeBron and say, look, these are the three or four coaches we like. Which one is important to you? And I think that when you're talking about a once-in-a-generation player like LeBron, I think that's kind of a dangerous trend when you think about it, but at the same time, you know, these teams feel like, you know, here's this ultimate chance to land the most coveted free agent in a generation. We're not going to mess it up by hiring the wrong coach.
Jimmy, assistant coaches tend to work on 2-3 year contracts, sometimes 1 year deals. How interesting is this going to be in the coaching community if 3 or 4 of the potentially top head coaching jobs in the NBA have to stay open until after July 1st because nobody can talk to LeBron?
Well, I think that management going to have some decisions to make, and once again, dollars and economics is going to lead the way. So I think it's going to be a very interesting summer starting after July 1.
Steve, no surprise anywhere that Doug Collins took the job in Philadelphia. Might have been surprising a couple weeks ago. He's had opportunities to leave the TNT booth before and has chosen not to. But once it became obvious this was a going home of sorts, it got done. What's the buzz around the league about Collins taking over in Philly?
Well, again, he's a proven coach. He's been around. Everybody knows him. They respect him. He's got a lot of good offensive and defensive philosophies, and he really has a lot of interest in what can happen with that roster. And I think when, you know, players hear that a new coach is coming in, you know there's going to be some level of change. But the fact that Doug has been very supportive of the young fellow in Jrue Holiday and getting the most out of Andre Iguodala, I think he even said Sam D'Alembert's name a couple of times. You know, and those are the things that players want to hear. They're going to be part of the future. You know, the one thing we are hearing is that, you know, the Philadelphia 76ers may move that number two pick in the draft and really try to go after a veteran. I don't think the Sixers are going to be in rebuild mode for a while, and I think they brought Doug Collins in because he said the things they wanted to hear, and that he thinks he can get them into the playoffs this year. And, you know, honestly, I think he's a coach that probably can.
Hey, Jim, real quick before we break, Phil is having fun with the media again. I always wonder how much of this is part of his coaching technique to distract the opposition, if not his own players. Has now refused to rule out coaching elsewhere, has said that he hasn't decided on his return, has indicated he wouldn't be interested in Chicago, would like to have a vodka with Mikhail Prokhorov in New Jersey. Any sense that this is truly Phil lobbying for his own position, or is this just typical PJ at this time of the year trying to keep the focus off the fact that you lost a couple on the road?
Obviously, he's under contract here in Los Angeles, and I don't know our rules and bylaws about usually in basketball, circle jobs have to become available before, you know, the contact should be made and we make our opinions known about jobs. So I think he's just trying to use the press right now to keep the pressure off of us.
All right, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break here. Back with more talk around the NBA. Free agent stories are huge. Complete list at hoopsworld.com. We'll talk a little bit about it. Jim Clemens, Mike Wilkening, and Hub Arkish bringing you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. Steve Kyler, the publisher of HoopsWorld.com, is with us as he is each week for the very best in NBA inside information, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You want to get to HoopsWorld.com on the web. And Steve, you guys have published basically the Bible, the complete list of NBA free agents or guys with the potential to become free agents, and so much focus on the top of the list, of course, on LeBron, on Dwayne Wade, if Amari Stoudemire opts out. You got Joe Johnson. You got Chris Bosh. But there's a bunch of other pretty good names on this list who should be attracting interest, if not moving, aren't there?
Absolutely, Hub. I think the total count is 180 players are likely going to be free agents come July 1. And when you think about, you know, 30 teams, that's a lot of open roster spots. And, you know, a lot of these teams are going to be spending money at the top. You're talking about a big commitment to a Dwayne Wade, a big commitment to a LeBron James. And there's a lot of that next tier guys, the second tier, that may be value guys. You know, when you're talking about a David Lee, a Tyrus Thomas, Al Harrington, John Solomons, Ray Allen, even Raymond Felton, there could be some real game changers for a team. And when you look at Miami, that's probably going to have to fill, you know, 12 roster spots this summer. You know, there are going to be some good players that probably be had cheap. And while I think we get caught up in the big names at the top, I think the middle of this list is really going to be where the power change takes place. And the teams that can get more of those middle tier guys, I think are going to be the teams that really make a change.
Jimmy, I know you are prohibited from discussing other teams' players until July 1st. And really, the Lakers in pretty good shape as far as having your roster locked down for the next couple years. But a couple guys, they're going to be free agents or at least with options, Jordan Farmar and Shannon Brown. If one or both of them were to choose to move on, a dramatic impact on your ball club?
Well, once again, I think the entire league knows that the Fish has an opportunity. I think he has an option or his contract expires. But once again, neither one of our two young guards are ready or able to fill his shoes. So we are in somewhat of a quagmire. You know, and Fish, I think, is already 35 or turns 35 this summer. So we need to get younger at our guard spot. But once, you know, Fish is such a wily veteran, I certainly vote for him to come back and, for at least a year or two. And, so we're, you know, probably will be looking to fill some spots ourselves.
You know, Wilkie, Steve mentioned the real power here is in the middle. You look at some of the names not talked about as much. Ray Allen will be free. Paul Pierce actually has an option. You know, the Celtics could really get torn up. Josh Howard, the Wizard, have a team option on him, but here's a guy who could be out there in free agency. We don't know what Dirk Nowitzki is going to be. Indications are that he might opt out. So, Mike, off that top five, and obviously Nowitzki would be in that group if he opted out, who's the next one or two guys that really jumps out at you?
Well, a guy that I think could have a major impact that we haven't brought up yet is certainly Chris Bosh. And I think he's a guy that you have to take a real look at. And certainly he's going to have an opportunity. Carlos Boozer is a guy that I really think is going to be interesting to see how much he makes in free agency. A guy that rebounds like that, scores in the low post, I think he's very, very valuable. I know certainly from his standpoint, if he tests the market, I think he's going to be paid, and I think handsomely paid. Those are guys I look at. Maybe a guy like, you know, Bosh certainly I think is going to be a max guy. But maybe Boozer doesn't get that sort of money. I think he could have that type of value. Again, he's a guy that to me, you know, can be, you know, a consistent 20-point scorer and be a low post sort of threat. I love the way he fits in with Utah. I think ideally he would stay there. But again, I think he's going to have a lot of options.
Steve, before we let you move on, we mentioned those other head coaching openings, the Clippers, the Nets, the Bulls, Atlanta. Anything that you are hearing of interest there, or are they really all kind of on hold or locked down until LeBron Derby starts?
Well, I think the New Orleans Hornets have kind of settled in on where they're going to go. It looks like it's going to be Boston assistant Tom Thibodeau. You know, the Hornets have been kind of in damage control mode on that because word got out too quick, and they don't want to derail what Boston is doing in the postseason with discussion of Tom Thibodeau, but talking with guys in the locker room just last night, you know, they're already starting to divvy up the furniture, if you will, in the divorce, you know, which staff members are going where. So it does look like Tom Thibodeau will be the next head coach for the New Orleans Hornets. It looks like Dwayne Casey may get the Atlanta Hawks job. They're kind of waffling. They've done their second round of interviews. They've actually brought the candidates in to meet with the owners. It's kind of down to Dwayne Casey and Avery Johnson, Dwayne Casey being the front runner, at least in GM or Rick Sun's mind. So I think those are the next two that we're going to see filled. The Bulls are kind of doing the dance. There was discussion of a Lawrence Frank, you know, really having a couple of good interviews, but maybe ownership has kind of soured on that one. You know, there's talk that maybe Mike Brown is going to interview with Rob Thorne for the New Jersey Nets job. So it looks like they're starting down that process. But really the next two is probably going to be New Orleans announcing Tom Thibodeau and the Atlanta Hawks probably settling in on either Avery Johnson or Dwayne Casey.
All right, guys, we've got to take another quick break. Steve Kyler, thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week. We're back with more NBA playoff talk in just a moment. You are listening to Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News, and we are talking NBA way we hear it. Now we're going to talk a little NBA playoffs as we've got the two conference final series rolling along. A reminder to all of our stations around the network, we tape late Thursday to hit that air window for everybody, over 100 stations around the country between Friday evening and Sunday morning. And as we lay this program down, a Game 6 pending about 24 hours away between the Boston Celtics and the Orlando Magic. And Jimmy, you know, 4 or 5 days ago, nobody ever thought this thing gets to Game 6, but boy, Orlando's been impressive in getting those last two wins.
Well, they have finally understood the sense of urgency in which they need to play. And they are playing the type of basketball I thought that they were going to play in game one. But obviously it took them a while to understand and get a hold of how Boston was going to play the series. And they have responded very well.
Wilkie, one of the puzzling things to me about the Boston Celtics is how people can be readying Rajon Rondo's bust for the Hall of Fame through games three, and now he clearly has been part of the problem in losses in game four and game five. And this is a kid with all the physical talent in the world who appears to need to be reminded every time he steps on the court just how good he can be.
That might be true, Hub, but what I would say is certainly the reason why we were readying the bust for Rajon Rondo to go to Springfield, Massachusetts in the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame was that he played wonderfully at the end of the Cleveland series and played so well these first three games of this series. But still a relatively young guy, only 24 years old, and a guy with some development left in his game. Certainly the outside jumper needs a little bit of work, but, you know, all the same, still a guy that we've seen his upside in this series, a special player, and, you know, they're going to go as far in the playoffs as Rajon Rondo takes them.
Jimmy, interesting question for you that I've heard people wondering about. Now, the problem in the last two losses for the Celtics has not been, quote, the big three, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, and Ray Allen. It's more that the team defense and the role players that were so great in the first three haven't been as good in four and five. And yet I wonder, you had that kind of funky scheduling where they were getting three, even 4 days off early in the series. Now you're back to almost an every other night pattern. Is that likely to wear on an older Celtics team more than the young Magic?
It certainly will, because the amazing thing about the playoffs is when you start looking at the, you know, every other day syndrome, is the fact that playoff games are not only physically taxing, they are also mentally draining. And when you have more days in between games, it allows you to kind of get back and find the energy that you need to go out and play 100% rather than just going through the motions. So when you have extra days off, it allows your body to relax. It gives you a mental freshness and edge to come back and compete at the highest level.
Well, and following up on that, because I don't want to just talk about the Celtics, it is the Magic who've been brilliant in winning games four and five in must-win situations. And I call them the young Magic, and yet the two older players there, key guys, Vince Carter at 32 and Rashard Lewis at 30, you know, Jimmy, they seem to have bounced back a little bit in games four and game five, but they clearly are going to have to be there for the Magic if they're to pull off this miracle comeback.
Well, I think that in reading the paper, you know, there were some things behind the scenes that we didn't really understand that were happening with some of their players. And I guess they're to be commended for putting forth the effort. But I think that the Magic's bench, J.J. Redick has given them a nice bump. I think they're trying to find a way, but the bigs are helping them. So their fresh legs, quote unquote, I think will serve them better than the older experience, if they can push the tempo. I think game six is all going to be about tempo, and Boston Garden, TD Gardens is going to be rocking and rolling, and the Celtics will try and find that as a source of energy for them in game six.
Last thing before we break real quick, Jimmy, how interesting is it that with the Magic, and certainly Superman has played better in games, you know, four and five, but Dwight Howard not even the focus of this resurgence in terms of this team getting back into this series?
Well, I think it bodes well for the Magic, because if they were going to rely on his offense solely in the low post, this series would have been over in game four. I think they made an adjustment, try and run him in transition, which I think was very wise, and give him his touches when possible. But they were going, Boston, as we saw in games one, two, and three, if they were just going to throw him the ball down there and tell him to score, he doesn't have those skill set yet. And so I think it was very wise of them to try and get other people involved, move him around, screen rolls, let him slip, give him the ball on the move. But if they were just going to say, you know, we're going to throw the ball in here, Boston's was too old and too court basketball savvy to let that happen.
Game six between the Celtics and the Magic, that'll be Friday evening. We are back in just a moment to talk about those Western Conference Finals between the Lakers and the Suns. You always know when the conference finals roll around in the NBA, they are playing for keeps. And a little bit of a surprise for the Lakers as they get out to a 2-0 lead, but then go to Phoenix, and that great defense in the first two games isn't there in games three and four. Again, as we tape our program, we're just a couple hours away from a game five back in Los Angeles where the Lakers have been brilliant. And Jimmy, we all know that there's a huge home court advantage in the NBA in almost every sport, but it can't just be about home court. What adjustments did the Suns make in Phoenix to come back and not just win, but be so impressive in games three and four?
Well, they want to, you know, give credit to their zone defense, and if that's the case, then give them credit. We certainly did not attack it correctly for the most part, but our defense has been lacking, and we haven't played with the energy that we did in the first two games, so we're going to try and get that back intact tonight.
And Jimmy, let's clarify a little bit, and I may even screw up the question, but for many, many years, you know, zone defense in the NBA was illegal altogether. Now you can get away with a modified zone. You can't really play it the way you play it in college, but you certainly can try and do it. And so is it something that you hadn't seen as much of before they did it, or is it just not a style that the Lakers are comfortable playing against?
Well, most teams play a form of zone, but we usually don't see it for the extended amount of time. And I think that kind of bothers us a little bit. And then, a lot of times we took the form of least existence. And so that being said, we didn't move the basketball. We weren't patient enough, and we began to settle for outside shots rather than taking a more judicious way of, you know, being more workmanlike and moving the ball, trying to get the ball back inside to our bigs.
Mike, the story of Game 4 in Phoenix was a Suns bench that nobody had really heard of. They were playing so well at one point that apparently Robin Lopez and Jason Richardson suggested to Alvin Gentry that he just leave him on the court, extended time in the second period, and they widened the lead. Is it something that the Suns bench can maintain over the rest of the series?
I see no reason why not. I mean, I don't think Channing Frye was going to shoot as badly as he did in those first few games of the series, and certainly he's come out of his slump, and Dragic, one of the better backup point guards in the game, someone that gives them another look. I think those are the two keys. Lewis Edmondson off the bench as well. You've got guys, capable guys that know the system. They can go deep, and I think particularly with regards to the way they played in Game 4, you know, and you look at a guy like Frye, that's kind of him returning, you know, shooting the ball better than he did earlier in the series, kind of coming back to that past form. If these guys play like they did at the end of the regular season earlier in the playoffs, certainly you would expect the bench to be a key part of what they're doing going forward.
Jim, one thing that intrigued me after Game 4 was listening to Kobe's entire post-game press conference, and he was focused and upset and clear it was about the Lakers' team defense. Now, he certainly didn't call anybody out. He wasn't giving himself a pass, and yet by his anger, you know, you almost would assume that he was mad at his team, and yet watching the tape a little bit, you know, Kobe's defense wasn't very good, at least in spurts. Was it a loss of concentration, or is it something that you guys need to adjust or would like to adjust a little bit going forward?
Well, all of the above, Hub. Yeah, our individual defense wasn't very good. And so when your individual defense, that goes to your team. So we certainly didn't play our very best. But once again, give them credit for making adjustments. And now we have to come out and do a much better job of just playing a better team game at both ends of the floor will bode well for us.
All right, so let me ask the question a little differently, and I'm going to put you on the spot now, but what the hell, we'll have some fun here. Kobe has been an NBA all-defensive player. It's what sets him apart from LeBron and Bosh and some of the other wannabes. It's what makes him the best player in the NBA today. It's what sparks the comparisons to Jordan. He's a great defensive player. His defense wasn't great in Game 4. How does Phil approach that with him? How do you approach that with him, Brian, whoever it is? How do you handle something like that?
Well, we've had two good film sessions, and I think that all the guilty parties have been identified. And we know what our responsibilities are, and if we want to move forward, then we best get the job done quickly.
All right, so I suspect what we're saying here, and I know that it's Dwight Howard who uses the Superman nickname, but you probably don't want to tug on Kobe's cape too much would be the answer on that one as you guys get ready for Game 5.
Well, you know, Kobe's competitive, and there's an old adage, when you watch film, we see the film doesn't lie. And so, like I said, we've had our film sessions, and we know our expectations now. It's up for us to go get the job done.
All right, Jimmy, listen, I know you've got a ball game to get ready for. We wish you the best of luck in the rest of this series, and particularly Game 5, which will have been played, as most of our listeners hear it, but we hope it works out well for you guys. We will talk to Jim Clemens again next Thursday. Right now, it's time for us to transition. All kinds of NFL news this past week. We've got it all in the way we hear it coming up next. Hub Arkish and Mike Wilkening back now with NFL Way We Hear It on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. And we welcome in Executive Editor Dan Arkish. And, Dan, a couple of your teams, good football teams, the Green Bay Packers, the Indianapolis Colts, contenders this year, some personnel issues, we will call them. And I start in Green Bay, where Johnny Jolly, who emerged as a surprise force at the left defensive end last year, is possibly not going to be a Packer this year. He's had some well-documented off-the-field problems, some drug possession charges, the possibility that he violated his probation, league suspension could be coming. Nobody really knows how this plays out. But the Packers feeling like maybe with B.J. Raji and Ryan Pickett, they could be on the offensive here and possibly even release Jolly?
That's what we're hearing, Hub. Like you said, even though he had a really good year, his future really is hanging in the balance right now. You know, there are claims that he might have violated the terms of his probation on this trial that he faces for possession of codeine. And at the very least, he could be looking at a pretty major suspension. So, yeah, the Packers have made some moves. They've moved Ryan Pickett to that end position, even though team insiders believe Pickett is still far better as a nose tackle. But, you know, there are some other things, too, like former first-round pick Justin Harrell, who might be finally healthy for the first time. He could figure in there. Plus, they drafted two ends, too, including the second-rounder, Neal.
Well, and of course, even Harrell drafted out of Tennessee originally as a 4-3 defensive tackle, but so was Johnny Jolly. And remember, the end position in this 3-4 is very different. If Harrell were healthy, you have to wonder if he couldn't be the kind of key piece in the background of this story.
Right. The bottom line is Jolly was very good, but not good enough to the point where they're planning on him.
Well, and no question, Dan, how good Robert Mathis, the Pro Bowl defensive end in Indianapolis, is. And you almost never hear this out of Indianapolis, but Robert Mathis, unhappy with his contract, staying away from team OTAs, not sure how unhappy he is, but clearly nothing's going to happen until Peyton Manning gets a new deal first. How serious is this in Indianapolis?
Well, Indianapolis always does its best to try and make everything seem not very serious at all, and they always claim that they have all their ducks in a pond along these lines. But the fact that there could be as many as 18 Colts becoming free agents at the end of next year, there's a lot of people that are standing in line. But obviously, Jimmy Ursay has said that Peyton Manning is going to get that big contract, probably be the richest contract in the league, and everything will wait until that's taken care of, and it just will remain to be seen how much is left in the pool after they take care of Peyton.
Dan, in St. Louis 2 months ago, 6 weeks ago, seemed like a done deal that Champaign, Illinois businessman Shahid Khan was going to be the next majority owner of the ball club. Then some questions surfaced about his dealings with the IRS. And Stan Kroenke, the well-known St. Louis entrepreneur, owner of two Colorado pro sports franchises, the Avalanche and, of course, the Denver Nuggets, surfaced as a guy who might be a likely buyer with no promise to keep the team in St. Louis, but clearly a stronger financial base. Problem with Kroenke has been that they've got this NFL corporate rule about not being allowed to own other pro sports franchises. Rumors now that the NFL has agreed to work with Kroenke to give him a chance to divest those other interests if he would consider taking over the Rams?
Yes, absolutely. They did a similar thing for Wayne Huizenga for a time there with the Dolphins. Kroenke is very well liked. He's also very rich. And the NFL, likes that a lot. And I think it's really looking good for him. But obviously, he still has to figure out a way to circumvent these rules, these cross-ownership rules. The best bet is that he, in effect, is going to sell the Avalanche and the Nuggets to his wife, Ann, who's also very, very wealthy, an heiress to a huge fortune.
Yes, and from the Walton family, a member of the Walmart money group. So there's plenty of money there to be spent. Dan, thank you very, very much. Now, Wilkie, I keep asking myself, what's the purpose of this NFL cross-ownership rule? Where were they coming from in the first place? Because they continue to be fairly serious about it.
I think, from the NFL standpoint, certainly you want an ownership group that, first of all, has the necessary capital to run a team, and secondly, is primarily focused on that particular entry. So I can understand the basis of those rules, and I can also understand waiving them at some point if you have the right candidate, with deep pockets and certainly the ability to run a team like Stan Kroenke does the Rams.
All right, Michael, certainly those are the primary focuses and reasons for the rule. We take another quick break here, and we've got more NFL Way We Hear It coming up next. Lots of news from the courts. We've got it here. And an unusually busy week in the National Football League during the off season. Usually the dog days right after the draft. June 1st free agency doesn't often mean that much anymore, but it certainly means quite a bit in San Diego. And we welcome in Associate Editor Michael Blunda. And Michael, San Diego Chargers have got four restricted free agents. It reads almost like a Pro Bowl roster. Wide receivers Vincent Jackson, Malcolm Floyd, not a Pro Bowler yet, but a pretty good player. Offensive left tackle Marcus McNeil was a Pro Bowler as a rookie. And you've got lights out himself, Sean Merriman. None have signed their tender offers as restricted free agents, and GM A.J. Smith is considering playing hardball with these guys. Come June 15th, he can rescind those offers. They'd still be his property. They would play for 110% raises during the season. This looks like a no-win on both sides, and yet all four of these guys continue to stay away from voluntary team workouts.
Yeah, we're hearing the line has kind of been drawn in the sand in San Diego. These guys, they're all looking for long-term deals. They're not, willing to just play for these one-year tenders, and they're just going to stay away as long as possible. They're not going to sign their RFA tenders. They're going to try to see if they can maybe, stick these holdouts for as long as they can and force the Chargers to give them long-term deals. But A.J. Smith seems pretty certain that given the uncertain CBA situation, he's not going to be doling out any big money to free agents this offseason.
Well, and Michael, even under normal circumstances, without the CBA problems looming, I don't think Sean Merriman's a guy they're going to sink huge dollars into. Malcolm Floyd is a nice wide receiver, but probably not a guy you build a team around. Now, Vincent Jackson and Marcus McNeil, we know that they'd like to keep around long-term, but quite frankly, this appears to be a situation where the team has all the leverage.
Yeah, exactly. The team doesn't really have to do anything with these guys. They can go ahead and just keep the situation the way it is, and they'll all be back next year. Now, they are risking the players holding out into the regular season if they don't give them their wishes, but that seems to be something they're willing to live with in order to not have to sign any of these guys long-term.
Yeah, it seems like a risk worth taking, particularly, again, with the possibility of a lockout looming in 11. Even playing for less than they think they're worth, they'd be giving up seven figures each if they didn't show up for the regular season. Michael, thank you very much. We want to now welcome in Associate Editor Dan Parr. Dan, I don't want to say a similar situation in New Orleans, but certainly a key player, running back Pierre Thomas, who emerged in the New Orleans Saints' march to their first ever NFL championship. He is also a free agent. He has not been visible at OTAs, but here reports that there may be a long-term deal in the offing.
That's right. Pierre Thomas is the lead rusher in New Orleans. He is a key guy in that offense. At Wednesday's OTA session, he was not participating. He was not there. We're not sure if he's going to show up as we tape this on Thursday, and we're not sure why he was absent. We haven't heard from Pierre Thomas. It's possible that he may have just been with his cousin who was shot in Chicago last week. He was said to be visiting with him. We're not sure if he is still there or what the plan is with him. But the Saints have said that they are open to signing him to a long-term deal. And Thomas may another reason may be he just staying away to make sure he's healthy. He was at voluntary workouts earlier this offseason, so it's an interesting situation right now.
Yeah, offensive left tackle Jamal Brown, thought to be one of the best left tackles in the NFL prior to missing basically all of 2009 with injury problems, has also not signed his tender offer, has been absent from OTAs, and he's a guy who we've heard the Saints have waffled a little bit on a long-term deal.
Yeah, it's probably unlikely that Jamal Brown is going to be seeing a long-term deal. He, as you said, missed all of last season, and the Saints have quite a bit of depth at tackle right now. German Bushrod did a pretty good job. They won a Super Bowl with him starting at left tackle. He may not be as proven as Jamal Brown, a two-time Pro Bowler, but the Saints feel good about his future. They spent a pick on Charles Brown in the second round of the draft, another guy who could develop into a quality tackle in the future. So I don't think Jamal Brown will be seeing mega bucks from the Saints this offseason.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. I want to come back to Mike Wilkiny now with a couple of big stories off the field this past week in the NFL. And the first one, the 2013 NFL season, February of 2014, the Super Bowl will be played in New Jersey. The NFL has given a one-time exception to its rule of a host site of the Super Bowl having an average temperature on game day of 50 degrees. It's never been fit. Well, I shouldn't say never, but it's almost never 50 degrees in New Jersey in the first or second week in February, Mike, and yet they're going to go for it. A lot of conversation about this decision.
Right, and obviously the decision telecast the NFL Network. I don't recall a Super Bowl decision getting this much play. such as the nature of putting a Super Bowl in New York or New Jersey for the first time. From my standpoint, it's certainly going to be one of the more intriguing Super Bowls we've ever seen. Everybody talks about the weather aspect of it, and certainly that's something that has to be taken into account. But from my standpoint, what I'm most interested to see is this. If it's successful, does it open the door for the NFL to consider other cold weather sites going forward?
Well, and Mike, the question has to be, how does it not? Because I have mixed emotions. I haven't decided yet if I like this or not. There's pros or cons on both sides. But what is clear is if New York's entitled to it, places like New England, Philadelphia, Denver, with relatively new stadiums that are large enough to host a Super Bowl, should absolutely be given the same consideration as New York. And if they're not, you have to wonder how the NFL owners defend that.
Right. This is sort of, I think, the test case. And again, why not try it in this market at this time? I would imagine that going forward, we're certainly going to see, you know, the same markets that typically get Super Bowls, the New Orleanses, the Florida locations continue to be in the mix. But a few more locations cold weather-wise, if it works out, I think just gives the NFL all that many more options.
All right. The one other off-the-field story, one of the biggest stories in years for those who understand it, the Supreme Court rules against the 32 NFL owners. We will talk about that in just a moment in the Publisher's Pen.
The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Well, Mike, a momentous ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court this past week against the NFL and its 32 owners, one that impacts not only the National Football League, but professional and big-time amateur sports across the U.S. The NFL had applied to the Supreme Court to have them hear the appeal of American Needle Company, a company that they had defeated in all the lower courts. The NFL asked the court not only to rule in their favor against American Needle, but also to issue a broader ruling that the NFL should be exempt from the antitrust laws. Now, what is huge about this story is two things. One, not just that the NFL lost. That was always a possibility. But in a court that has moved further to the right with the appointments of George Bush in recent years, many thought they had a chance to win in the typical 5-4 ruling that we're seeing out of these courts. They were defeated 9-0. None of the justices wanted to rule in the NFL's favor. Now, the other huge impact of this story, there have been no collective bargaining negotiations, in part because the NFL needed to know where they were going to end up with this ruling. Had they gotten an antitrust exemption, they had a hammer over the NFL Players Association and would have done nothing to negotiate in good faith unless they got exactly what they wanted. Now, the opposite. They've been defeated in the courts every time the NFL Players Association has taken them there on an antitrust basis. Look for the absolutely frozen negotiations between the owners and the players to thaw very quickly now, as the players have gained all of the advantages relative to any potential legal proceedings. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News. Our thanks, as always, to Steve Kyler, the publisher of HoopsWorld.com, Randy Myers, who does such a great job for us every week as both producer and engineer. Our home studio is Syndication Networks. And most of all, our thanks to all of you. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week, same time, same station, on Pro Football Weekly and Basketball News.